Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hey, everybody, Matt Halloran here with another podcast, Invest with Clarity. And we're going to do a part two. All of you love the part ones and part two. So we decided we're going to do a part two on Inflation Nation part two. I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, but this has been in the news just a smidge. And Chuck and Mark are going to walk us through what it means to understand inflation so that you too can invest with clarity. All right, Chuck, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Hey, you got it, my friend. Great to be with you, Matt, and certainly Mark as well. So how about this? We'll get the academic economic mumbo jumbo out of the way from the beginning, right? Because I'm going to let Mark roll on a couple of these here. So, yeah, we got to talk about what is inflation, kind of what's
the second. I have one question.
Yeah, what?
No, Matt's going to yell at me for interrupting. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
What's the definition for those that don't know what mumbo jumbo is?
Okay, I'm sorry. If anybody's listening to this and they don't know what mumbo jumbo is, you should probably just pause this and go do a little bit of self-reflection. But
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's get that definition of what inflation actually is and means.
Okay, so here it is, right from the lips of Investopedia. Inflation is a rise in prices, which can be translated as the decline or decline, depending on where you live in the country, of purchasing power over time, the rate at which purchasing power drops. So three things before I pass it to you, Mark. There's three things that cause inflation. Now, again, you're talking about mumbo jumbo, but I got to get this out of the way because I think we're dealing with all three of them. So we have something called demand pull inflation. And this is kind of what happened during the pandemic. So here's what demand pull inflation is. It's when there's not enough products or services, i.e. the pandemic, right? The supply chain being produced to keep up with demand, causing their prices to increase. So we have that component. Here's another one, which is near and dear to Mark's heart, because this is why we believe inflation will be persistent. Cost push inflation occurs when the cost of producing products and services rise, forcing businesses to raise their prices. And the last one is this built-in inflation. And here's the one I wanted to tee up for you, Mark, occurs when workers demand higher wages to keep up with rising living costs. So again, just for our listeners, demand pull, not enough products, right? In economics 101, supply low, demand up, cost push, when we have products, right? Pulling them, unearthing them, the cost goes up. And then we have this built-in inflation, which will keep, we believe, inflation higher, which is workers demand higher wages to keep up with their own living costs. So it's this vicious cycle that we're probably going back to, maybe not 6, 7, 8%, but my goodness, the average rate of inflation historically is about 3.5. We lived in la la land. How do you like that for another great term? Over the last 20 and 30 years, we had globalization, we had free trade, everyone loved one another, we trusted each other, and all of a sudden the world has changed amongst us. So I'm gonna pass that back to you and tell us what your thoughts are.
Well, there's a lot of mumbo jumbo in there. That's for sure.
Thank you.
We're in a very unique period that I don't know that we have seen probably since post World War II.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that out of common sense / guessing with some information, obviously. But I think the two things you have happen is you don't have enough workers in the workforce. And we are not going to have enough workers in the workforce for a long time. Therefore, it is tougher to fill jobs. And therefore, the only way you can fill jobs is you have to pay people more money. Additionally, we are in a period where we are moving from a deglobalized economy to the extent that the United States is going to be producing a lot more of its goods here in the United States and not in China, Taiwan, or anywhere else. And so the cost of the goods are going to go up. So inherently, you have no choice. There's going to be inflation. Additionally, you have a higher need for energy, and we are not producing enough energy here at home, and that will keep, in my opinion, energy prices higher. So you have a convergence of several things going on. I would also say that I've never mentioned this before, something I've been thinking about this morning, Chuck, and that is that it's possible that over the next 5 to 10 years, we could fall behind in some areas because right now there is very little desire to invest in technology because technology stocks are getting hammered. The valuations of these technology companies are coming down. And it's my opinion that investment dollars will look to other areas to put money as opposed to in technology. Now, I will say that I believe Web 3.0 will be the next area of growth. Jim Cramer said on CNBC this morning that, you know, or somebody said it, maybe it wasn't him, that the cloud is entering its mature stage. So the immense amount of growth coming from the cloud is not going to be there anymore. It's going to stabilize. And a lot of companies, including Microsoft and Google and Amazon and NVIDIA and go down the list of cloud-based companies, they're going to probably start to see in the near future their businesses begin to stabilize and not have the kind of growth they've seen in the past. And of course, technology is the number one factor that lowers prices, because the more technologically advanced you are, the less it costs to produce goods and services. And so it's something no one's really talking about, but it's just something I think is a potential problem in terms of research and development 5 to 10 years down the road. Now, as investors in businesses, we're going to invest where we think the greatest growth is as money manager and money management firm, and we're not going to be biased. But we've been in a bull market for a long time on technology, and I think it's something that we as a committee probably need to really watch and take a look at the numbers on.
Mark, I think you nailed it right there. And we go harken back to our acronym for this year, which was the word wait, right? Asking certainly our clients to be patient in that T is ultimately what we're waiting for, this technological innovation. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because it's always been the elixir to periods of inflation. And our team has chronicled this, right? It comes in four areas. It comes in communications, number one. Number two is transportation. Number three is what you just said, energy or power generation. And number four is medical breakthroughs. And when society transforms and moves from what is now, what you said, globalization to deglobalization, the companies that are going to be profitable, correct me if I'm wrong, in all of those areas are going to be the ones that are able to innovate and then employ that innovation with inside their business model,
yes,
to keep costs down, productivity higher, and then profits higher, right? That's how it works.
Well, remember also, yes, 100% correct. But also remember the theme that we have been talking about for close to 2 years now, and literally you're starting to hear the media talk about it. As much as I would love to have my ego stroked and say that all these super smart people listen to our podcast, the reality is they don't, unfortunately for us. But I say that kind of laughing.
You heard that, Matt, right?
Yeah, but we are moving into a different metric of evaluating investments you want to invest in. And there is tremendous opportunity in very specific businesses and sectors right now, which include the ones we've always talked about: financial, energy, and healthcare. And it's interesting, you're seeing the movement of the markets today after Google's and Microsoft's earnings. And the reality is we're finally at this place now where these companies have to come into line on their valuations. There's always a revision to the mean. The question is, how long do you stay down too much, or how long do you stay up too much? I think we're done being down too much overall in light of where we're at right now. But it was a long time that we stayed up and had extremely you know, in hindsight, people would say ridiculous valuations, and people get emotional, and you got to look at your metrics and decide where to be. But in my opinion, our opinion as a team, the allocation of how we're investing in businesses right now has been absolutely correct the last 2 years. And I think if this keeps up, we could actually go positive on the year in our portfolios.
Hey, I want to jump in here. I don't normally do this, but Mark, you just talked about those three categories, right? And the podcast is Inflation Nation. And those three things, energy, financial, and healthcare, are huge components of what people spend their money on. Help me understand all of that, please.
I appreciate the fact that you actually caught that. That's exactly right. Financials are going to do well because interest rates are higher. So while people will get higher interest on their money, it's still going to be below inflation. And the financials will do well because of, without going into all the details of why financials do well in higher interest rate environments, but financials do well. Healthcare and energy have always been, for the most, I shouldn't say always, often are considered very inflationary things. A lot of people who listened to the media think that oil is going to go back down to $40 to $50 a barrel because we're going to have a recession. I'm not in that camp. I think oil is going to go back over $100 to $120, and I think gas prices are going to remain higher, and natural gas prices are going to remain higher for an extended period of time. And people say it's going to go down because of a recession. Okay, if it does go down because of a recession, that's great. Guess what? Recessions end and you're going to have a need for energy again. Higher energy costs, higher healthcare costs. You think about all of the innovation that's being done in cancer drugs, right? Everything that's happening with dementia, right? And Parkinson's. Healthcare is going to remain expensive for a group of people that's super big that are all getting old now. And those three areas, Matt, definitely are going to be inflationary, and they are going to have pricing power because people are going to pay for it because they're not going to have a choice because you need all three to function in life.
All right, Chuck, bring this back to the idea of the research surrounding this and what you guys are seeing is going to be happening because of those three major categories. And let's bring this back to the great Chuck's research here.
Thank you, Matt. And Mark, as always, teased it up great. You did as well. So let's talk just a couple of things. So I want to talk about kind of this composition of inflation. You mentioned, Mark did, then you reiterated the three main areas. And I want to pivot to people as always take the glass half empty approach. So I want to bring us back to what actually the cure for high prices is and why we believe where inflation is going to settle. So first of all, just for those who want to know this, that the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is the measurement of inflation. It's determined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Here's the interesting tidbit. They look at 80,000 different items on a monthly basis. Now, they convert this into a formula, but nonetheless, I want everyone to know how much is researched to show how inflation is measured. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you go back in time, post-World War II, we've had 18 periods in here. This is a period number 18, where we've had spike in inflation, where inflation is at least tripled off of a bottom. And when I talk to folks, they're of the mindset that, well, because inflation hit 9%, that was the highest in this at least regime, we've come down now for the third consecutive month, likely in November to the fourth consecutive month. I think it's going to stay up forever. Well, the reason inflation is going to come down is that the cure for high prices is high prices. That's what Mark just said, right? That's how you have to think, right, Mark? You have to think forward looking and then ask yourself, where is this ultimately going to settle? And then how will it affect the business that we own? So go ahead, take it from 100%. There.
Well, two things. Number one, first, when we invest in businesses, we invest for the next 3, 5, 10 years, not the next 6 months. That's number one. Number two, yes, the cure for inflation, high prices is high prices. Okay. However, there is what's called cyclical, and then there's what's called secular growth expansion.
Right.
Cyclical is short-term in nature, secular is long-term in nature. I think we're in a higher inflationary environment that is secular in nature. It'll be longer term. I also think we're starting to hear a little bit of chatter now that the markets are stabilizing. We're starting to hear a little bit of chatter of what we've talked about also, which is that Powell is going to have to come back and backstep on 2% inflation and tell people actually 4% is going to have to be where we're going to be at. We're going to target 4% instead of 2%. We're not going back to 2% inflation, at least for a long, long time. I mean, historically, 2% inflation has been in monetary policy periods like we just went through. And those are secular in nature, and that period just ended. Just like secular bull markets end, cyclical bull markets, bear markets, they all end. And we're now entering a new type of secular bull market in multiple areas, which include higher inflation, higher interest rates.
Well, I love what you just said there. It's that difference between the cyclical and the secular. So just for our listeners, secular, longer term, say 3 years out into maybe 15 to 18 year patterns, cyclical less than 3 years. Interesting thing that you also talked about, Mark, which I wanted to rein in too, is that when you're looking at businesses that actually excel during periods of, which is called higher inflation. So just for our viewers, we've basically lived in a world over the last 20 years where inflation was at one. I mean, it was a panacea. You had 1% inflation, you had low costs of goods and services because of globalization. You had high profit margins, certainly based on advanced technology. And all that is undercoming a massive change. And again, why is the change there? The resourcing, right? Factories, jobs back to the US, back to Western Europe, where there's a higher standard of living. So those embedded costs, we talked about in that beginning, are going to drive up, right, the cost of goods and services to the consumer.
Yes.
But it's those businesses, here's where I want you to get this, is your sweet spot. Those businesses that actually employ, and I'm just going to call it technology inside its operations, to overcome those higher costs, to manage the business, to still allow their workers to be productive, pay them more, and in turn still be profitable. And now that becomes this stock picker's market, no longer the era of 10 to 15 years of just owning a broad-based index on throwing the dart at growth and just smiling and earning 15% of the year. Right. Those days are long gone.
Right. Agreed. When I used to do financial planning years ago, when I used to, I managed our own clients' portfolios, and then obviously you get to a point of expanding your brand and your business. So I haven't done financial planning for years, but when I did, I always sat down with my clients and said, look, here's the deal. When we're doing retirement projections, we're going to use 4% forever because that's the historical average. And during lower inflationary periods, great. You bank on that and you get a higher differentiation of your savings versus the costs of living, right? And as inflation goes up a bunch, you've already buffered yourself for those bad years. 4%'s been the number I think it should be used. That's what we have used. We use now with our advisors. 4% is it. And the beauty of the businesses with like healthcare, energy, financials, insurance, another example, you can go down the list in a lot of different businesses. They have pricing power because as the cost of everything goes up, they're going to raise their prices, which means they're going to raise their profits, which means they're going to be great investments in general, of course. And as we are now, we're coming up to the election in a couple of weeks, we should probably do our next podcast after the election so that we can debrief on that piece of it. But I do believe that we are in a period where things are going to cost actually more than things really cost before this whole monetary policy thing happened, going back to 2005, 2006. So that's why you got to think about your investments. I was just thinking while you were talking, why wouldn't you own Visa? During the financial crisis, full disclosure, we own Visa. During the financial crisis, people complained about how high gas prices were going and how high healthcare was. And I always said, you know how you fix that problem? And everyone's like, no, how do I fix that? It's easy. You buy energy stocks and healthcare stocks. It's called a hedge. And, you know, if you're going to pay more, so is everybody else. And guess what? The companies are going to make more money. So invest in the companies. That's how you hedge your position on higher inflationary costs. And so as inflation continues to go, we're going to look at the businesses to own that are going to benefit from higher inflation because they have pricing power.
Boy, Mark, as always, you nail it. It's amazing. It goes back to that old saying, there's always a bull market somewhere. I think Cramer said that, or bulls make money, bears make money, pigs get slaughtered, right? And it's unfortunate that a lot of investors who don't have clarity always seek for that silver bullet, as we call it, to be the answer to everything. And there's a playbook. There was a playbook. There's a process that unearths value. And I wanted to kind of get to that. And we got probably 7 minutes left here in the podcast, but I want to talk about expectations. And I remember you led me to this quote. It was interesting because there used to be a show called Nightline, right, with Ted Koppel. And this was before the days that the iconic status of Warren Buffett kind of made its way to households. And he was known certainly in the investment world. Yes. But in the late 80s, he was interviewed by Ted Koppel. And I think everyone probably remembers Ted Koppel.
Right after he bought. Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. It was right after he bought Dairy Queen.
Exactly. And which was interesting because he had bought See's Candies and he started to get into smaller businesses, turn them from public to private. And he asked him what was the secret of success. He said, the secret to happiness is having low expectations. So we have lived in a world, and here's what I'd like you to talk about as we kind of get closer to the end here. We've lived in a world where everyone was under the premise that the Fed and politicians were our friends, meaning they were always going to backdrop with either major fiscal stimulus, that's money coming from the federal government. The Fed was going to bring rates down to zero, other countries' negative interest rates, and they were the fix, right? They were the elixir to this whole thing. And we had V-shaped, we went down 20, we went back up 30. We made up our losses, if you want to call them that, negative returns within a short period of time. So I want to give you just a couple of numbers here, and then I want you to speak about expectations. Because you said the first one, expect 4% inflation. You're right. The historic average is right under 4. Just nail, put in 4, right? So you think about this. You want to own a business that's going to, over time, grow its earnings more than 4, pay a dividend, hopefully grow the dividend, right? Yep. And here's, I want to give you these numbers. So the S&P 500 peaked on January 3rd. We don't follow indexes, but just for audience, at 48.18. As of Friday's close, to get back to that, we need a 28% return. And it used to be, well, that's a piece of cake, right? If that would take 1 year, we get back. 2 years, it would take 14.2% each year. But here's what I want to give you these numbers. 3 years at 9.9, that's just the historic average. If you take 4 years at 7, it would take 4 years at an average rate of return of 7.8 to get back to where we were. The last one is this. If you earn 6.6 in an index, it's going to take 5 years. Investors have to realize, here's what I'll lay on you. It's about business ownership. It's about sifting out of the rubble from what we've just gone through, those diamonds in the rough. And you have to have a process in this type of environment. If you don't, you're just going to get lost. So here we go.
Well, it reminds me of my T-ball days when I was a young man. Putting that baby right on the tee for me with my mag bat. So that is correct. Low expectations on returns. We have been spoiled. Correct me if I'm wrong. From the height in 2007 through the financial crisis, it took to 2013, was it?
It did.
We reached the old highs of the S&P 500, right?
So you're right. And I'll do this. And the NASDAQ went from 2001 to 2016. It took 15 years. Right.
Don't be surprised if that happens again with the NASDAQ.
You got it.
So that's, and so during, so when the tech bubble happened, do you know how long it took for the S&P to get back what it lost from the tech bubble and 9/11? Do you know?
It took 13 years. So it was March of 2000 until April of 2013 until the S&P went over that 1555 and never looked back again. That was the 13 year.
1555 the height in 2000?
2000, yes. We crossed over that again in April of 2013 and never looked back. We so briefly crossed our... Yeah, but go ahead.
It took 13 years for the S&P to come back.
We were in a secular bear market from 2000 to 2013, yes.
I don't think we're in a secular bear market.
No, I don't either.
I think we're still in a long-term secular bull market, long-term growth, short-term bear markets. We just had a short-term bear. We're living through the ending period of a short-term bear markets. Markets usually move 9 to 12 months before a recession is even noted. So if we get a recession next year, which I'm not still convinced we do, everyone says we are, but I'm not convinced we are. Now, remember, recession is different than saying that we've seen a slowdown in the economy. You can have a slowdown in the economy from 6 to 3% growth. That's not a recession. It's still 3% growth. You have to go to negative growth to get a recession, for those who didn't know. So I think that what will probably happen in the next 5 years is you will see a shift in the S&P 500, maybe in the NASDAQ, but more in the S&P 500 in terms of what the leadership companies will be in the top 10. You know, historically, Visa was one of them. JP Morgan is one of them. At one time, I believe Exxon was one of them.
Absolutely. General Electric.
General Electric. So I think you're going to see a shift in the different companies that will be leading the S&P. But that said, those types of leadership companies don't get valuation metrics ever, like you've seen in the technology space, which does mean, I hope I'm wrong. When we went to our advisors in December of last year, of 2021, we said, I hate to say it, but you need to be preparing your clients that we're going to have a down year next year. I said, don't be surprised if we're down 15%. Now, to be blunt and fully transparent, I was guessing because we don't make predictions. But the numbers were definitely in favor that we were going to have a bad year. And that was in December. I said, I hope I was wrong. Unfortunately, it's looked like I'm going to be right. But I think we'll exceed our clients' expectations in terms of our performance. But my point is, back to what you said, the key to success is low expectations. Because when you think about it, if your expectations are too high, people always get mad at you that you didn't reach their expectations. Because I have a news flash for everybody. People are emotional. Shocker. So when we don't meet expectations, unfortunately, they get mad. But people are always happy when you exceed expectations. It is a function of psychology. It is managing, it is leading the clients with psychology and helping them understand the behavioral characteristics of investing. Because great businesses will make money and they will go up in value over time. But people do not always act rationally and they don't always behave rationally. And so focusing on that aspect is one of the foundational components of Nepsis, right? Know what you own and why you own it, and ultimate clarity. And I think that we are working our way through a period that's a transition that we're 2 years in. Probably will take another year to 2 years when some people will finally realize that we're in a whole new world. And investing now is going to become far more important to choose money managers who have a track record that you can say their track record backs up their philosophy and their strategy. It backs up their process before progress.
Matt, you got to love it, right? As we wrap this baby up, how about under promising and over delivering? There's nothing wrong with that in any form of life, right?
Well, there isn't. And what a great way to go ahead and end this. I think that there are so many people in financial services who are consistently over promising, and then they get frustrated when their clients don't, they're upset they didn't live up to those expectations. Clarity sometimes isn't comfortable. Clarity sometimes isn't the shiniest, most beautiful object. It's the reality of the situation. And when you have clarity, when you invest with clarity and you know what you own and why you own it, then you don't have to overpromise. You don't have to underpromise. It is what it is, because that's why we own what we own in those specific portfolios, because they're there to do something specific. All right, everybody. You got a final thought there, Mr. Pearson? You're on mute, brother. I'm totally keeping that in, by the way. I'm going to tell the post-production team not to edit that out, but no, it's okay.
I couldn't have said it any better myself. That is exactly why we focus on process before progress. It's why we focus on the investment process, the buy discipline, the sell discipline, the philosophy and strategy. I couldn't have said it any better myself.
Well, we got it on tape that you even said that. So, I'll come for my royalties later, my friend. No, anyway. Anyway, listen, everybody, here's the deal. During times like this is when you need to have the right education. You're sitting around the dinner table. You're going out with your friends and family. You know you're talking about this stuff. Please set them on the right course by providing them with this podcast and with the information that Nepsis shares all over their website to help you truly understand what you own and why you own it. It is easy to share the podcast. All you have to do click the share button. And most importantly, when you hear somebody saying something that is utterly ridiculous that you know is something they probably heard on television, which is wrong, you need to refer them to the show. If you have not subscribed, make sure you do that way. Every time Chuck and Mark come out with a new show, it'll show up on your listening device. For Chuck and Mark and everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.